It's time for the Morning Invasion.
I love those guys.
On Star 88.
Good morning, everyone. It is Shock Therapy Live time. It is 9:04.
High today of 35 degrees.
Nate Heitzik is here. Hello, Nate.
Dude, you know what? I was thinking we could just not do Shock Therapy Live today. Instead, we could talk about wings. We could have Steve-O do his wing deal
again. It's Wing Wednesday.
And we could have people call in and talk about how they identify with wings.
I don't. Here's why
and
I don't
who
want
they
to.
They feel like they are.
Shock Therapy Live is kind of a serious show, and so we deal with people with struggles. And I didn't realize how insensitive I was being talking about wings, because poor Dexter has the shortest arms of any man I know, and I realize it's probably really difficult for him to get the wing to his mouth. Mm-hmm. So if anything, I just really I don't want to bum him out more.
That was a buck insult. What happened?
Shout out to Aaron.
Yeah, everybody is. Uh-huh. Buck just texts Steve-O constantly, like, hit him with this! Yeah. Hit him with that!
See, he knows.
You know why? Because he was the elder of the show, like I am, and he understood what it was like to have two young kids on the playground bullying and tag teaming up against
him. That is so not true.
Constantly.
I was the one who always got bullied on the show.
Whatever, right,
Nate,
to you, Dex.
You listen to my old show. I was always the one who was getting picked.
Rawr!
Oh, well, you know what?
Just calling you T-Dex, you know?
T-Dex.
He's got them little
like
T-Dex
that.
Arms.
I like dinosaurs. Look, Steve-O, we can't all have an AARP card, okay? There's got to be one.
But I drive a minivan, so I'm cool.
Yeah. It is Shock Therapy Live.
You drive a Subaru, don't you?
Yeah. We bought Chrissy a... Shout out to DiLorenzo. We bought Chrissy a brand new minivan this week.
It's a spaceship.
It is a spaceship. She drives the Enterprise.
And she didn't want a minivan, come to find out. She wanted this really nice SUV, but Steve-O's like, no! This minivan is perfect for you!
Dude, better gas mileage. It's got Blu-ray.
It has Blu-ray?
Yes.
Really?
It has a
It's got an HDMI port. It's incredible.
In the back, you know how every car has like a cigarette lighter you can plug into, you know? And then like in our van when we were on tour, we wired in an electrical outlet or whatever. So this van has a full-on real electric outlet in the back. Just
that's
chilling
sweet.
There.
Yeah. My like, SUV has
with it's HDMI, awesome. With three USB ports, so you can just plug stuff.
You got, satellite cool. radio on there?
Actually, the funny thing is it came with like a year of free, you know, XM radio or whatever. And Chrissy was like, I got it. And I said, if you sign up for that, I'm going to be angry.
That's right.
Why?
He irritated.
Will be perturbed.
I will be ired.
That's right.
That's right. Hey, I didn't say it.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Because I have a morning show, bro.
Dude. Satellite radio.
Shout out to Lithium Radio.
isn't the worst thing ever.
It's not the worst, but it's also not the best. It's no like Apple Music.
You know what? You know what's funny is satellite radio was so huge, and then like you have things like Pandora that came out, and it's like okay, satellite radio is kind of worthless now because now you can listen to like because you have everyone's like oh, but I love this style of music, and that's why I love satellite radio. Well, that's what Pandora is.
Yep. Yeah.
That like literally. Picks out exactly what you want.
And the thing with satellite radio is with me, the reason why I didn't stick with it is because I really only listened to one, maybe two channels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's it. I'd find myself just going back to the local radios.
Yep.
So.
And that's why we're here.
I understand how satellite radio works for the people that live out in the boonies, that live out in the Hills Have Eyes areas.
Stop it.
Where, you know, Tao grew up in Mississippi.
What's that?
I understand.
I grew up
the
in
swamps.
The sticks, not the hills.
Okay.
For real.
I've never been to Mississippi.
Don grew up in the swamp. Mm. Straight up, like an actual swamp.
Mm.
Alligators.
In the bayou?
Yes. Not the bayou. That's Louisiana.
Oh.
No.
338-3700. Phone lines are open. It's Shock Therapy Live. We have Pastor Nate Heitzik here, and he's going to answer questions, concerns. You need some motivation in your life, encouragement.
Everyone's like, I don't want to call now. They're talking about hot wings and swamps.
Oh, my gosh.
Hot wings and purity rings.
Hot wings, swamps, and minivans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pretty much.
What's your favorite wing
the world?
Sauce?
What's my favorite wing sauce?
What's your favorite wing sauce?
Man, I don't think I have a favorite wing sauce.
You need to go.
I have a tough time. Every time I go to the wing place, I can't just pick one. I've
got
to pick like five different ones.
Yep.
Same.
Traditional
or boneless?
I can never pick just a single one.
Depends on the establishment. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Traditional all the
way. I'm traditional all the way.
No. I don't want that breaded junk on there.
Nope. Mm-hmm. Depends on the establishment.
Actually, honestly, for me, it depends on the deal. If you go in, it's like, hey, it's Tuesday, you get extra boneless.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a boneless
fan.
It's
like, I'm a boneless fan.
Yeah.
I usually always get
it. All depends on the deal.
I've been married 13 years. I am obviously a boneless fan.
We got some emails.
Let's let that. Let's let that hang for a little bit. Hey, Chip. Chip, did you hear that?
That's not cool.
Not cool.
Sorry. Sorry, Cartman.
All right. Phone line's open, by the way. 338-3700. If you want to email the show, studio@star88.fm. All right, let's get to our first
email. Leave.
It just got so quiet. Just quiet.
Sorry. Nate's been here for years saying horrible things. I say one thing, I'm out.
What are you talking? I've never said
I need anything. Less from you.
Okay, I'll stop.
Okay.
I'm going to play my video game.
Speaking of what Steve-O brought up.
Oh, good.
Just look at accessories for your minivan.
I'm just good at segging into real conversation, man.
Just look for accessories for your minivan.
It's happening.
I've been struggling with this since I was a teenager. They want to keep this anonymous.
Okay.
Throughout my childhood, I was taught that sex is a beautiful thing, but I should wait until marriage. My parents never gave me the talk. I found out from many friends. Now that I'm an adult and I've changed my perspective on a few things when it comes to Christianity, waiting until marriage for sex crosses my mind. I ask my friends what they think, and of course, most of them believe it's all right if you love the person. I understand that God tells us to wait because he wants sex to be special and with someone you love. I also know that he tells us to wait because he wants to protect us from what could happen, such as pregnancy, HIV, STDs, etc. But what if you're in love with the person you're dating? You see a future with them, but you don't know how else to prove your love. It hurts because you love them, and you're afraid that if you tell them you want to wait until marriage, they might leave you. It's understandable that, of course, he or she wouldn't be the one if he ran away after telling them you want to stay pure until marriage. I want to stay pure, but my body is telling me different things. There have been many times where I've almost lost control, but I've ended up stopping the situation. So my question is, how can you bring up the conversation of purity and how you want to wait until marriage without scaring the other person away? Also, what are some tips for staying pure when dating? Please give me any advice you have. I need all of it.
Well, you know, I think the first thing, the easy way to stay pure when dating and not to scare your spouse away or your love away by letting him know you want to stay pure is by making sure you're dating someone who has a relationship with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you're a Christian and you're looking for someone to marry, someone to date, the person that you're looking for should be a Christian. So now, again, I'm obviously speaking as though the person I'm talking to is a believer. But I think that's the first thing, because a Christian couple going into a relationship should both have the same sets of values. Something we talked about before, not just are they a Christian, but are they converted? Does this person have the evidences of a relationship and a walk with Christ? Which, if that's the case, the concept of staying pure before marriage shouldn't be like a big surprise and shouldn't be something that should catch you off guard. It should just be the understandable norm for a relationship that's set up following God's parameters. And here's the issue why. When you give yourself sexually, it does something, you know, far more than the dangers of pregnancy and the dangers of STDs. It does something to you spiritually, and it does something to you emotionally. You're giving a part of yourself to that person that was only meant for marriage, that was only meant for a relationship that was founded in the grounds of marriage. And what it does, especially if you have these this set of ideals, the set of things in your mind that you say, I'm not going to do this, what happens is when you drop the bar and you say, you know what, I'll do it in this situation because I love this person, it sets up a thing within your mental state that if you're willing to do it then and drop your boundaries, you're willing to drop your rules and your regulations at that point in your life, what's going to stop you from doing it again in the future? So when you're married and the relationship isn't working out all that great and you're not getting sexually gratified, you're not getting your emotional needs met, what's going to stop you from dropping your rules and your regulations at that point and having an affair and having sex with somebody else? Because you've already done it once, so you've obviously shown yourself that you can do it again. And you set up for yourself just a series of going to the next low when you drop those convictions like that. And so what I would do as far as talking to this person, whether they're a Christian or not a Christian, I would say, look, I love you and you know, don't get me wrong, I want to have sex with you, but it's something that I treasure so much that I want it to be a gift for you that is only for you within the confines of marriage. And I want you to know that I'm holding that and I'm keeping that, and that that is your treasure, and that's something that is yours when it's in the confines of marriage. And I think that that could be, whether you're a male or a female, if your significant other tells you that, that could be very meaningful in that mindset, whether you're a believer or whether you're not a believer, knowing that they're saving that for you, knowing that they're keeping that for you, and that it's something that they're only going to give to you within those confines of marriage, I think can be very meaningful and special.
I think all of us here, well, I can't speak for all of you, so I'll take that back. For me, when I got married, there's nothing more that I would want than to go back and never had sex before marriage, you know, to give that gift to my wife. That I would, gosh, I would love to have given that to her, but I didn't, right. You know? And so anybody that's listening right now that, you know, is being pressured, you know, into having sex, man, just be strong.
Yeah,
you know?
This will speak volumes to it, because there are 50% of the people in this room waited and 50% of the people in this room did not wait. And the two that waited are content and high-fiving each other. And the two that did not wait are filled with regret and wishing that was something they could give their spouse. Wow. So there's not a single person in here who says, man, I'm so glad I didn't wait. I'm so glad, because it totally didn't bring a ton of emotional baggage and a bunch of, because when you don't wait, here's what happens. If you don't end up married, let's say that you decide not to wait. Let's say that you're like, you know what? Screw this. Quite literally, I didn't mean that. But you go for it. And that person ends up not being the person you marry. Now, for the rest of your life, you're dealing with the emotional tie to this person, the spiritual tie, because the two become one flesh. I mean, this is something that happens when you have sex. It is very, it's more than just a carnal act. All right, you are giving your heart, you are giving your body, you are giving your everything to this human being. Now, this person is not the one. This person is gone and out of your life. Well, you still have the emotional ties. You still have the spiritual baggage that will come with that, the hurts, the pains. You will have the guilt, you will have the shame. But on the flip side, also as a man, you will have the comparison. You will, for the rest of your life, have the comparison of their body, of the way that it felt, of the things that you did, of the, I liked this, I didn't like that. And unfortunately, a lot of times, you will in turn use that for the rest of your life as, well, but it doesn't feel like this, or we don't do that like that. And it does nothing but ruin your sex life in the future, actually. It really does. It damages so much. Now, can that be restored? Can God work mighty miracles? Can you in turn take that moment and say, I've made a covenant with my eyes. I'm not going to look lustfully after woman anymore. I'm not going to do these things. I am going to remain pure until such time. Yes, it's possible. Yes, you can do that. But it still does come with that psychologically, spiritual damage, everything. And you're just bringing that baggage into your next relationship. Yep. And the first time you do it, guess what? It becomes easier to do it the second time and the third time. And then next thing you know, you're just having sex with people going, wait, how did I get to this point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it sounds to you like it's a female that's writing this email. And I would say this too, this fear of driving the person away. I think if you have that fear that if you say you want to remain pure until marriage, that's going to drive that person away, I think even more of a reason why you should bring it up and say that you have these convictions. Because you believe that this is the person you're going to marry, but if you tell them you want to remain pure until marriage, that they're going to all of a sudden not want to be married to you, there's some serious issues in that relationship. And I think sooner than later, you should say, hey, these are my convictions. I want to remain pure. And you know what? If that drives them away, good riddance.
Yeah.
That's not the kind of person that you want to be with and spend the rest of your life with anyways. You know, it's so funny. You said that I think this is the person I'm going to marry. I love this person. I want to take the next step and show them that I really love them. Well, that's called marriage, not having sex. Mm-hmm. That next step is marriage, is you know, saying, man, I love this person. We've been dating for a long time. I want to make this more serious. That's marriage, not having sex.
Yeah.
So that's the next step. And if that's scary, if they say, no, well, I can't marry you until I have sex with you, there's some serious issues there. And that's not a relationship that you want to seal anyways. And so I think sooner rather than later, you need to let that person know, look, these are my convictions. Because here's the issue. What happens is when we have sex with somebody and we give something to them that's only meant for marriage, we create this little mini marriage because we've given to them a part of ourselves that was only meant for our spouse. And what we do in our culture is we create these mini marriages. And then what happens is when they end, when they fall apart, it's like a mini divorce. I mean, it's ugly. And that's why people have these ugly ugly, ugly breakups where, you know, half the friends have to hang out with this person now and half the friends have to hang out with the other person. And it looks like a divorce because they've given things that are only meant for marriage. And so it can never end well within that standpoint. God reserved those things, not just for our physical health, but for our emotional and for our spiritual health. And no wonder the divorce rate is so high today, because what we're teaching ourselves is that it's okay to give something that's only meant for marriage. Then when you get bored, it's okay to just pack up your bags and leave. Mm. And so we're teaching ourselves that in this dating relationship, that you can give yourself away, you can have sex, you can create this union, and then you can leave when you don't like the person anymore. And that carries into marriage. And so when people get into marriage and they've had sex with this spouse and they get bored and they find someone else that seems better, they feel this inclination to just leave, because we're teaching ourselves that as a culture. So that's why it's so important to reserve that for marriage and reserve that for your spouse.
338-3700. You guys can call in if you are dealing with something, you have a question. It's Shock Therapy Live. I know we have some more emails.
Oh, yeah. Check this one out. Taking a complete different path. Hey, guys, I need to keep this one anonymous. I found out that the pastor that led me to Christ just resigned due to some very hard-to-believe things, affairs, stealing church money. My question is, how does someone who is so knowledgeable in the Word of God and is so great at preaching sermons, how are they doing that kind of same that stuff at the same time? I know he's human, and making mistakes is going to happen, but it's been going on for so long, apparently. It's like 14 years. I have to believe that at some point he really, truly was saved and knew Christ and want to know if there's anything else besides praying that can be done so hopefully he could get right or back on the right track. Thank you for your insight in advance.
So the question is, how is that possible for him to fall?
How is that possible? And then I think that's just kind of coming from a place of shock. But then practically, it's like, what can I do besides praying to try to help that person, restore
that
person?
Well, I guess it depends what kind of a voice you have into that person's life as far as what you can do. The thing with ministry is isolating. Mm-hmm. And it's isolating by the nature of it, but Satan wants to isolate us even more. And so what happens is in ministry, you're put on this platform, you're put on this pedestal, and it's a biblical pedestal. The Bible says that those who teach are worthy of double honor, that we're to esteem those leaders, and that we're supposed to honor those leaders. And so it's isolating in that nature, that you're platformed on this position, that you're responsible for people's spiritual growth to a certain extent. And so it's an isolating position to be in. And what happens is Satan wants to come along, and any leader in the church, and really any person who has a leadership position in general, and Satan wants to isolate us even more and say, man, you know what, you can't talk to anybody about your struggles. You can't talk to anybody about the things that you're going through, because that, you know, you'll lose your job, or you know people will know who you really are. And Satan wants to further isolate that person in leadership and push them further and further away until they get to a point where they feel like whatever they're dealing with, they can't talk to anybody about. They can't deal with, they can't be honest with their spouse, with their overseeing pastors, with their pastoral friends, with anybody. They've got to isolate. And once we're isolated, that's when Satan will bring in temptation into our lives. Because it's smart, if you think about it, Satan won't bring in that temptation when we're in a place where we can deal with it spiritually, I don't believe. I think Satan's a tactician. And so it's once we're isolated and Satan knows that we can't deal with that temptation, that sin correctly, that he'll bring that temptation in full force. And then what happens is, because, as that person said, you know, these pastors, these leaders are humans, is they'll get this temptation that will come into their lives, and maybe at first they'll be able to withstand it, maybe at first they'll be able to push it away, but because they've isolated themselves, because they've put themselves in this position of not talking to people about their struggles, those struggles become their sins. Mm-hmm. Because they're not talking about, hey, you know what, I had a really tough time, there was this cute girl who walked past me at a Starbucks, and I really struggled with that. They're not talking to people about those struggles, and so eventually those struggles turn into those sins, and they're not talking to people about those sins. And so the question of how could this become, you know, a 14-year thing where no one knows, they've become so good at isolating themselves, they've become so good at not being transparent, they've become so good at putting on this mask that it's very easy to hide because they've lived their life in a life of isolation. They've lived their life in a life of this platform of not letting anybody see what they're really struggling with, what they're really dealing with. And that's how it can become a 14-year epidemic. Mm. You know, thank God for those people who start struggling with a sin and get caught in it within the first year, because they haven't become that good at isolating. They haven't become that good at hiding. And you know, I think that it's a blessing from the Lord when our sin finds us out, because the sooner that it does, the easier it is to recover and deal with it. The longer that it goes on, the harder it is to rise back up from that. Mm. So what can you do in that person's life? Well, if you have a voice into their life, if they've allowed you to have that voice, again, it's isolating to be in ministry. So if this person hasn't allowed you that voice into their life, you know, the best thing you can do is pray for them. A lot of those pastors, you know, I've got a friend of mine who actually, it's more of a friend of my dad who struggled in that area, who fell. And he didn't allow a lot of people to have a voice into his life. But the people who he did allow to have a voice into his life could have a great impact, because they were peers, because they were people that could talk to him and encourage him and help him in those areas. And, you know, he's out of ministry, but at the same time, he's got men in his life who can talk to him and who can encourage him and help him.
Yeah,
help
isn't
him along.
Isn't it important who you share that your struggles with as well? I mean, you don't want to just go to anybody that will listen. You know, you want to find somebody that you can trust, somebody that's been there for you.
Yeah, I think someone who can understand the pressures. You know, I think it's in anything. Again, what do you take it to a, you know, just the level of just a normal person who goes to church? The people who you want to have your accountability with are people who you trust, people who you know, people who you know have your back, and people who you know are going through a similar walk in life with you. Right. So again, the person that I'm going to go to, you know, for an accountability partner isn't going to be a single dude. It'd be right. A married dude,
yeah.
You know, because there's an understanding that we're walking through the same part of life. For me, individually as a pastor, the person that I'm going to go to is probably going to be a pastor as well. My accountability partners, some of the best ones, are pastors who don't even live in Albuquerque. They're pastors who live in other states that I can talk to and, you know, be honest with and be transparent with. So I think you want to find that person in the same walk of life that you're in, because there's an understanding of the same pressures and how to deal with it in a very unique way. So again, a pastor of this church, maybe, you know, 14 years, he's like, man, how did I never know? Well, because he's never going to go to you if you're not a pastor. He's never just going to go and it would be really unhealthy if your pastors every week got down from the pulpit, stood in front of the stage and told the congregation, hey, can I tell you what I struggle with this week? It'd be really, really unhealthy.
Yeah.
Because these people are responsible for the spiritual leadership, for pouring into you spiritually. And of course, everyone struggles, but that's not going to help you to hear how that person struggles.
And I also would add, I'm sure they chimed in an email. It was anonymous, but they chimed in enough to know or to ask a question. So I'm hoping that they hear this with the right heart. I'm definitely not coming from a place of condemnation, but I also would say it's a very scary place to be if you can take a look at a situation and go, ugh, how could someone ever do that? Mm-hmm. I would never. I've learned long ago that I'm a solid two steps away from destruction, basically at all times, apart from Christ. We are human beings. We are all fallible. We all fall short. And yes, we do esteem pastors, as you said, double portion, right? But at the same time, I think a lot of times, sometimes, because I have great friends in ministry that are at that level, and I think a lot of times because they are placed at such a high esteem, if you will, they kind of start to believe this infallibility. They start to kind of believe that they are greater than the system, if you will, that they are greater than you know, the I don't want to say lowly peasant, but they can kind of tend to start believing the hype about them. And so not hyping them to a place of the throne, because there's only one on the throne. But I think also, too, examining yourself and realizing, man, apart from Jesus, I am wicked. I am vile. And try not to, I guess, esteem yourself so much so that you believe, I could never. I don't understand it. Because I do get it. There have been times where we've seen friends fall, and it's like, dang, man, how could you? I mean, you got this, and you had this, and you had and this, and this, and this, and how could you, and why would you, and you get frustrated, and then you have to take it back to God's word, and you have to take, I mean, take it straight to the Lord,
you know,
and remember we're not beyond that.
Again, I think that Satan is a tactician. I think there's a reason that a lot of pastors fall is because of sexual sin, because I think Satan's kind of found the wheelhouse, in the sense that, you know, you hear your pastor, you know, had a beer, you're not going to be like, oh my gosh, how's that person in ministry? Maybe at some churches you would, but it's not going to be as big as, oh, your pastor slept with five different people. Mm-hmm. That's an immediate disqualification for a bishop and a deacon.
Yeah.
And so I think Satan's found that wheelhouse of, okay, how can I get these pastors out of churches as quick as possible? Oh, adultery is that thing that will get them out. Adultery is that thing that will cripple churches. Adultery is that thing that will drive people away from Christ. Great. That's my wheelhouse, and that's going to be the sin that I'm going to use within the church of this century to cripple churches and to cripple Christians. He's found it, and so he uses it. Again, that's what you see. That's the biggest thing you see in churches today, whether it's in the Catholic Church and sexual sin of molestation. You know, I watched that movie Spotlight. Goodness, that was tough to see and tough to think that happened, you know, in our generation. But he found that wheelhouse, that sexual sin, and he uses it, he exploits it. And so as a pastor, it puts this sobering reminder that, man, we need to gird ourselves up, and we need to guard those walls in our lives even more so in that area, maybe even in other areas, because Satan's using, exploiting that sin and that temptation within the church today.
And you're right. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, I know we're talking about, this email was about a pastor, but, you know, I think of everybody that's listening right now, and even me included. I love it when a brother in Christ or a friend comes to me and they tell me what they're struggling with, because I don't know, it makes me feel better, because, oh man, you struggle with that too, or you it makes me feel better about my life in a way. I don't know about you guys, but I know a lot of times we can think in our minds that I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't go to my buddy and confess this or ask for help, because he's going to completely look at me differently now. And we start to tell each other, you know, our mind starts playing tricks on us, you know. And for me, when somebody comes to me and asks for help, I can kind of breathe a little bit better, because I know somebody else is struggling with. Maybe it's the same thing that I'm struggling with, and we can have that bond and relate and help each other.
And it can, in turn, as you said, have that bond, because you never know. Maybe a couple of years down the road, you're the one that's dealing with it. You're the one struggling with it. And when someone is open to say, hey, I'm dealing with this, I'm struggling with this, I'm falling here, I'm failing, man, I need prayer, I need support, I need accountability, it in turn creates a, hey, this is a quote-unquote safe place, if you will. In turn, you will be more open to share your faults, your fears, your frustrations, your whatever it is. And you're right, that bond grows and grows, which is why going back to the last guy, accountability is so vitally important. You have to have it, because we can give you advice all day long and say, hey bro, sex before marriage, here's some cool tips and tricks to get through. But if you don't have that accountability in your life, we could talk till we're blue in the face, and no amount of podcasting is going to get you through the situation apart from that.
I don't know if it was a pastor I heard on our sister station KNKT talking about accountability, but he was saying that when he flies somewhere, he knows himself, so he always takes another pastor with him, his best friend with him, because he knows himself. And he knows if he's alone, he doesn't want to put himself in those situations. And I thought that was really cool, because, you know, you're always looking ahead. How can I make sure that, you know, Satan doesn't put out that booty trap, you know? And
the booty trap.
That's what I said.
The booty trap.
Instead of booby trap?
That's what I said.
Because booby trap would have worked too, and it's actually the correct terminology.
That's what I said, booty trap.
Well, there is, have you ever heard of, it's so important to have that accountability. Have you ever heard of Billy Graham's Modesto Manifesto?
No.
So when Billy Graham first started ministry, He got along with the guys that he started ministry with. Cliff Barrows, one of the main guys, and they came up with the Modesto Manifesto. What the Modesto Manifesto was it was a set of rules and regulations that when they traveled, this was the way that they were going to live their lives, and this is what they were going to do and what they weren't going to do. And this is why it was called the Modesto Manifesto. The team gathered in a hotel room in Modesto, California, and they drew up a compact that became known as that Modesto Manifesto. And let me see if I can find it. Let's see. Keep talking amongst yourselves, okay. And I'll find it.
On a dark reference. Desert highway.
338-3700. I know somebody's on hold. If you've been waiting patiently, we appreciate you. You still there?
Yes, indeed. This is Rhett.
Rhett's in effects.
If it's all right, I just wanted to sort of speak to your current topic from a slightly different angle. I actually know of a pastor who ended up having to leave the ministry because of some sexual sin, and it was exactly like you say. You know, it's, the devil always finds a weakness. He always finds, you know, that he finds your point of weakness, and then he attacks you there. And in this case, the pastor's wife had actually passed away, and he wound up through various, you know, it wasn't like all of a sudden, it was gradual, but over a period of, you know, 3 to 4 years after the death of his wife, it came to light that he was in the process of having an inappropriate relationship with his daughter. Fortunately, it was his adult daughter, and, you know, fortunately, you know what I'm saying there, but it was really interesting because, yes, there was a massive amount of fallout, and yes, you know, there was a great deal of healing that needed to be done and a great deal of repentance that needed to be done. But about 10 years later, this pastor now actually speaks to other pastors about his experience and about, you know, just ways to, well, things that he didn't do that he should have. And so it's coming from the voice of experience, so to speak. And so if there is anyone out there, any ministers or whatever that have fallen from grace, if you will, and feel like, you know, well, that's it. I've totally, you know, foobarred my calling. That's not necessarily the case. God can, in fact, turn it around, but you have to have a heart that's truly repentant, and you have to be willing to take the steps to, you know,
yeah,
be accountable, like you guys were saying.
Thanks, so, man. We appreciate the call, buddy. We do.
So good.
Love you, Rats.
So here it was. So basically what happened is when Billy Graham started his ministry, evangelism had a really bad name in the culture for a few reasons. Number one, evangelism was known for exploiting people's money and bringing in more money and trying to simply, you know, pass it again to get more and more money. So it was really known for abusing finances. It was known in that time for lying about the numbers that it had by puffing it up and making it seem bigger than it was. So it had a lot of misdealings. And so the Modesto Manifesto, these guys got into a room, and this was the pact that they made. They resolved, number one, to never exaggerate attendance figures at their meetings to guard against lying and deceit. Number two, to take only a fixed salary from their organization to guard against financial thievery. So that a fixed salary, they'd never let that increase, so they wouldn't be able to get more money for the big crusade. To number three, to never be alone with a woman other than their wife, mother, or daughters to guard against sexual sin. And even to that note, when they would tour and they would get into a hotel room, they'd have the TVs removed from the hotel room so it would guard against pornography. And then number four, to never criticize fellow members of the clergy to guard against pride. So they made it their goal to work with churches, to work with clergy. And so they kind of came up with those four things, and they lived their lives and they lived their ministry by that Modesto Manifesto. Anywhere they went, they lived based on those four things. And it affected their ministry because it guarded against the things that caused people in the church to fall. Pride, a sense of financial, to do it for financial gain, lust and sexual impropriety. So it guarded against all of those things within their ministry. And I think that's one of the reasons why God really blessed it, was that they set that up as a pact amongst themselves early on in their ministry.
Can you email that to me?
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
So, it's I think it's important. It's important to set up for us those safeguards within our lives. And again, Billy Graham, the greatest evangelist of all time, had a group of men that he was accountable to, a group of men that were walking through the same walk of life that he was accountable, that they talked about their struggles with, that they prayed with each other with. And so if Billy Graham had that in his life, I think it's so much more important that every one of us does, too.
And I think Tao found that this morning on the show.
Oh, my gosh.
He found that accountability with Steve-O and I.
Okay.
And little Jay Danger and Don.
Beans.
Oh, man.
Beans the cat.
We're his accountability partners.
Hey, you guys leave Beans out of this.
Yeah.
I got to protect that cat.
338-3700. We got a couple lines open if you'd like to call in. It's Shock Therapy Live. We have Pastor Nate Heitzig here. Of course, Teo's here. Steve-O's here.
Beans.
Beans is here.
Beans is here in his furry spirit.
So, got another email?
Yeah, I got a question, though.
We got a couple.
Why do you like cats?
Why not?
Because I got a cat and I hate it.
Personal preference.
I mean, that thing
is... He's just a bad cat.
It's crazy.
Why'd you get it? Your dad hates cats.
My wife was like, we should get a cat for the kids.
Oh.
We got a cat. It was a bad decision.
Well,
you just get rid of that one and get another one.
Cats destroy more than dogs do.
They
claw everything. I have pictures that kind of prove otherwise this week.
No, I'm getting that cat's toes cut off in a couple weeks.
Don't do that.
Don't think that's legal. Don't think you can. Speaking of awesome dogs, though.
Decline, they'd say decline is like cutting part of your toe off, part of your finger off.
They used to think that declawing was a temporary pain, but I guess now, the studies and whatever, they're like, nah, they kind of deal with that for the rest of their lives.
Really?
Yeah. Dude, they cut dogs' tails off.
Not mine.
Who
little
cuts
curly
the
Q.
dog's tail off?
Little
That's
curly
a huge
Q.
People dock dogs'
tails. Or
tail.
Clip they ears. They clip ears on some dogs.
My father-in-law is a retired cattle rancher. They had to clip the dog's tails because for the blue heelers that were chasing around the cattle, if the cattle ever stepped on the tail, boom, boom, just dead.
Gone,
dead
dog.
Puppy. So, so sometimes it was definitely for their benefit.
They say that now there's a new procedure for cats where they can just kind of clip the tendons so the claws won't come out.
How did we get to this?
They'll have a study.
Speaking
on that,
of, if you up. Love animals, coming up on Friday, our girl Josette from Swarf will be joining us.
Yeah,
I cannot wait for this.
What
starting
is
something
Swarf?
New.
Is that like a Star
the
Trek?
The Southwest
thing?
Animal Rescue Fund.
But it's all dogs.
Nonprofit organization, and so if you're looking for a puppy, they're a rad organization that helps get animals into your home. And again, nonprofit.
I'm still going to choose to believe that it's about Star Trek.
Okay.
Okay. That's fine.
338-3700.
Gosh. I wonder if she has to dress up as Worf when she goes out somewhere.
No, Swarf.
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 I'm Swarf. Can
like
we
She-Hulk.
Ask her to do that? I'll text her. It'll happen.
Okay, we got an email.
I'm convinced that every Klingon, female Klingon, is named Swarf. Every single
Swarf.
One. They all are called Swarf.
I am Swarf.
And now transitioning to a serious email.
And now a serious email.
Maybe it's a question about Star Trek.
It's not at all. I speak from a different perspective. I can relate to all four of you guys as being saved and wanting to keep myself from sex before marriage, but I can also relate to sex before marriage, although I did marry the girl. In high school, I didn't date much. I was the straight preaching choir the fire kid in high school. I got along with everybody, but didn't really like the hypocritical church-going youth. Steve-O, I probably would have hated you. Smiley face. I was shy and only went on 3 or 4 dates. College, I wanted to go crazy and sow my wild seeds, but God had other plans and put some solid believers in my life. So I focused my college life on the Lord, fasting and seeking His face. My maturity led me to praying for the type of wife I wanted to, praying to the type of husband I needed to be. Okay. I studied biblical relationships and spent much time in the prayer closet. Things go bad when I lose my grandfather to cancer. A year later, I lost my grandmother despite my skipping a semester in college to help out with her last 4 months while battling cancer. I wanted God to heal her, but that's a long story. I returned to college, and my friends and I started a church a couple months later. Things go from great to weird in about 3 years, and I'm slowly fading in my faith. A young lady had come into my life, and after 2 years of being friends and gently pushing her away from dating, we began to date. She initiates everything from the first date to the first kiss and eventually to intimacy. I'll keep it short. We ended up marrying, but I found myself wondering, what if I had stayed pure? Did I fail God? Am I forgiven? Do I really love her? So many doubts. My marriage has been built on these doubts because we never repented and stopped. Did I marry her because I felt guilty about what we did? I don't know. We were going through a divorce, and now we're trying to work things out. We have two beautiful boys, but if I could, I would do it all over again. Sounds weird, sounds cold, but I urge you with all my heart to seek God and refrain from intimacy before marriage. It's so much more than a good feeling.
Yeah. Well, again, that's the big issue there within a Christian relationship is you second guess and you question yourself like, man, if I was willing to do that, or if that person was willing to drop their convictions and drop their standards to have sex with me before marriage, would they be willing to do it again? And it does. It causes all this doubt. It causes all this unneeded baggage into the relationship. And that's why, again, if you love somebody enough to get married to them before having sex with them, then the gratification of saving that sex for marriage is, you know, just over the top. Mm-hmm. And so I hear a lot of people say, well, you know, I just can't wait. So when you have to stay pure before marriage, it just makes you get married that much quicker because you want to have sex. Man, what a terrible reason to have sex.
Yeah.
To try to blame having sex and breaking the laws of God and blaming it on that. That's ridiculous because the negatives to that are so much greater. Again, what this guy's dealing with, saying, man, did we just get married because we had sex and we felt guilty, and so I felt that I had to marry this person because I had sex with them. I think that the negatives are far greater than the positives.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, though, we can't just end it like you can't leave it, friend that emailed. You can't leave it where you are because we're talking earlier about the devil working through isolation. And what he's done is he's taken your doubts and he's isolated you with those doubts. You can't just spend the rest of your marriage saying, did I fail God by sleeping with her because we got married? Like, is he secretly mad at me? And so there's like, you know, if something goes wrong, he's going to be like, boom, that's because you had sex before you got married. I've been waiting for this, because that's not God.
Yeah.
And so you can't sit there and just keep miring around in your doubt, wondering. I mean, you just said you've got two beautiful boys,
yep,
but if you could, you would do it all over again. It sounds to me like these doubts have a heavy, heavy hold on you. So much so that you're almost excusing your boys in a way, not totally, but in a way, you can't fall back on that. That's a big reason why people get divorced. Mm. It's because they go back and they say, you know what? We didn't do it perfectly
the
first
young,
time.
We were young. We were pressured by the church.
And
to
try to blame it and say, well, I don't know if that was the right person or if that was the one for me. Look at whether you believe that person was the one for you or not, the second you said I do, that became
so
God's one
you
for you.
Mm-hmm.
The second you said, yes, I'm going to marry you, that became the person that God had chosen for you.
I know way too many people in ministry, seriously, in ministry, that unfortunately have this conversation regularly of, well, we were Christians, we were wanting to do the right thing, it got hot and heavy, we knew we probably weren't going to be able to, you know, and we were instructed by our pastor or our youth pastor, somebody like, if you can't keep it in your pants, you do the right thing, you guys got to get married. I know so many people who got married under that guise and then are now looking at it in their 30s going, man, I just feel like if I had only stood
thought about it a little
if
more.
If I thought about it a little more, da da da. And you're right; it doesn't matter.
Because
maybe it was under a false pretense, but I always go back to the Book of Judges, where Samson was under the Nazirite vow and was told, "Hey, don't screw around with the wrong people." And he's like, "But this Philistine chick, yo!"
Yeah.
And he did under the wrong pretense, and God still used it for His glory.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm not saying it was the correct thing to do, but the fact of the matter was, he did it. It's a done deal. God had to use it in a different way, and so you can't look back and say, "Oh God, if only I had if," because there are no what ifs.
Well,
you're
look at
married.
David and Bathsheba, man.
Sucks, man.
That relationship didn't start it on the right terms.
Nope. Yeah,
and as far as we know,
they were still together when David died. Yeah, and check this out. I want to share.
Dude, Johnny Cash and June Carter, am I right?
Yeah.
I mean, adultery, and they just turned out great.
Walk hard.
God uses it.
I want to tell you the other side of it, too. Because I saved myself from marriage.
Yes, he did.
And on both sides, you're dealing with the same thing. Did I do it right? Because then you save yourself from marriage, and you get married, and you still have problems.
Right.
And there's part of the problem with purity culture, because that's what it was in the 90s. It was hardcore purity culture in youth group.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, purity rings. You have, what was the big movement thing? It was, I can't remember what it was. True Love Waits.
Yeah.
That's what it was. So anyway, the big problem with that is you get on the other side, you saved yourself a marriage, and then you have problems, be it financial, intimacy, anything. And then you think, God, I did this right. I did this your way. And now I've got issues. You owe me.
Yeah.
Mm. I did this right. Mm. And now you're going to give me these problems? So what I'm saying is, either way, you're going to deal with this stuff. Mm. So you can't. You're holding it to that standard of, did I do it perfectly? That's your heart issue. And that doesn't matter to God because of, I mean, did Jesus die on a cross and raise from the dead for no reason? You know, if it comes down to something where you're saying, did I do this right? If I would have done this right, would it be better? That's life. That's humanity. That's every single problem with every single issue.
Mm-hmm.
In your case, it applies to your marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way things are.
I mean, you said it this morning on that Delilah call. You got the creditors after you, you know?
Debt collectors at my door.
Dex collectors.
It's true, though. For real, please take that to heart because you can choose to let this go and live your life in joy and in victory. You can choose that. I'm not saying you're not going to deal with it, but if you hold on to this stuff wondering if you did it right or if it was good enough for God, that's not salvation. And we have to believe that God's grace is bigger than our actions. We have no faith. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so good.
338-3700. We got a little bit of show left here. Shock Therapy Live. We got Pastor Nate Heitzik joining us in studio. And we got a ton of emails this morning.
Yes.
And that's the way to do it. If you can't get through the phone lines, it's studio@star88.fm. You can also message us on Facebook if you'd like.
The thing is, when it comes to sexual sin, there is so much shame that's attached to it that a lot of people don't want to talk about it. They don't want to be known. They don't want their voice to be heard because there is so much shame that's attached to it. And, you know, I feel like there's more shame attached to sexual sin than any other sin in our culture today. And it is isolating. And so it's tough to talk about it, but it's so healthy to talk about it at the same time.
Mm. Truth.
More
and with that, this heavy email. Why do churchgoers tend to dress up for the services? Are there any biblical references to show why this should be done? That's a real email. We really got that.
Gosh, you know, if there are biblical references to it, I think it would come from a lot of cultural things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in Timothy, it talks about don't adorn yourself with pearls, dress modestly, you know, don't braid your hair, things like that. So I think if there's any biblical stance for why people should dress or not dress a certain way, it's in large part cultural.
Totally.
More than anything.
And it seems very old school.
Yeah. Well, it's cultural, but I think that there's still a spiritual standpoint to take from that. You know, the reason that, you know, Paul told Timothy to not let the women dress like that is because in Ephesus, where Timothy was, there was a huge problem with prostitution. And women who wore pearls and women who braided their hair was a sign of a prostitute. And so it was a sign that, oh, man, that person is a floozy. And so if you dressed up like that, it sent the wrong message to men within the church. Mm-hmm. And so I think if there's a spiritual takeaway of that, it's that we should be careful with what we dress and what we're associating ourselves with in the world. You know, in our culture, braided hair might not mean that you're a prostitute, but a plunging neckline, 6-inch high heels, and a miniskirt that, you know, is 5 inches below your waist, that's a sign of a prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe don't dress like that when you come to church. You know, I think that the standpoint is, be careful with how we're making ourselves appear before God and before men.
Mm.
And I think the bigger thing is don't do anything that would cause someone to stumble or that would cause someone to sin. So, you know, if you wearing that plunging neckline is going to cause people to be stumbled at your place of employment or cause people to be stumbled at your church, don't wear it.
True.
Don't pull the, well, that's just stupid and I should be able to wear what I want. You esteem that your brothers and sisters higher than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think would be kind of the takeaway from verses like that.
I had an experience. This was years ago. ago at a church where I grew up in Montana, and it's still to this day, I think about it, and it frustrates me because I think there are people in the church that, you know, are either they either work there or they're volunteering. And I remember there was somebody who confronted me, and they were upset on how I was dressed. They didn't know me. Mm. And, you know, I apologized and went on and said, you know, next time I'll definitely make sure I, you know, wear something more appropriate to your liking. But then I started thinking about it, and I was thinking, what if I was, that was my first experience at church? What if I wasn't a Christian yet? And this person comes up to me and starts attacking me about what I'm wearing. I would have been like, I'm out of here. I'm never coming back, you know? Yeah. And I think you got to be really careful, too, on how you approach people, on, you know, what they're wearing. You don't know the person. You don't know where they're at in life, you know? And so I like the culture now, especially, you know, Calvary here is so cash, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way, you know, Sagebrush was the same way. A lot of churches are just come as you are. And I think that's great because, you know, if you put all these expectations on people, I think that's going to stop people from making that leap of faith and that choice to come to church, you know?
Yeah. But I would also say on the flip side, for those of us that are business cash, you know what I mean? Like, or rocking it casual. Because I lead worship at Calvary Knob Hill, and I am definitely aware of my attire on Sundays because I don't... I'm a jeans and t-shirt kind of guy. But on Sundays, I don't sport jeans and a t-shirt. Yeah, I'll rock the jeans, but I usually will wear a button-up shirt to a point where Daniel's made fun of me. He calls it my battle drums uniform because I do dress a little nicer to that regard. But it's because I know that as a worship leader, we are ushering people into the throne room of God, essentially, right? We're preparing hearts and minds to hear from the Lord, from His Word. And I want to be mindful and respectful of that. And I would also say to those that are like, nah, bro, that's legalistic to wear a suit and da-da-da-da-da. You don't know the heart of that person. Maybe they want to dress up because they are, you know, they're going to church. And to them, this is a big deal. We're going to church and we're going to kick it. And I mean, Nate, you're always dressed to the nines in regards to like your attire. I think you wear yourself well in that regard. I'm not saying like you have to wear suits, but you dress well. You buy nice clothing. Your dad always looks dope.
Well, I think you don't want to be.
You know what I mean?
I don't think you want to be a distraction to someone's worship. You know what I mean? And so you don't want to come in like on
flip
Sunday
flops.
With like Dorito stains on your shirt and like a little bit of Mountain Dew stain on your pants.
Why are you looking at me?
No, it's so
you're the chubby one.
See, he took it to a
Mountain Dew.
He loves Mountain Dew. He's always got wing stains on his shirt.
But you know, you don't want to be rolling into church like that. You know, if you're not going to show up to a job interview like that, don't show up to church like that. You know, there's this sense of you don't have to dress like, oh my gosh, like why I don't wear a suit except on Sundays. You don't have to do that.
No.
But at the same time, there's this sense that you don't want to come looking like a slob.
Yeah.
But I think maybe that's a little bit more. Just in life, like I think in life, but there's this beautiful part. And you know, I was in Montana this past week, and Levi Luska was talking about this. It's that in life, a lot of times we feel like we have to put our best foot forward, and so we feel like, man, I'm at a job interview, I'm going to dress like this, or I've got to put this image of myself out there. I've got to make people think that I'm this kind of a person. But we don't have to put our best foot forward with God, and it's okay to come to church wearing sweatpants on the inside, and be who you are, and not have to put on these pretenses, not have to put on, you know, this view of this is who I am, this is what I look like. It's okay to come just as we are, to be sitting in worship and be a hot mess. You know, it's okay to be a hot mess, and just be as you are when you're in that relationship with God. And I think that does drive a lot of people away from the church. They're feeling that I've got to put this image on to associate and be like these people. Mm. And, you know, I think that when it comes to the world, coming to church, come as you are.
Amen.
Now I think what Steve was talking about, those who are in leadership, those who are in that place, I don't want to be a distraction to someone's worship. So I'm going to dress differently than what I would tell someone who's coming to the church to come dressed as. Because I recognize that when I come to church, there are, you know, there's people who don't like it when I wear a leather jacket to church. They're like, man, that's disrespectful. That doesn't necessarily stop me from wearing it, but it does keep me mindful of, you know what, I don't want to wear anything. I'm not going to come and stand on church with a Corona shirt.
Yeah. No. Is that why you shaved your stash? Because somebody confronted you and said,
sorry, man. Hey, it was one time.
I shaved the stash because I was sick of taking care of it.
The funny thing is, one time...
That thing's harder to take care of than my kids.
One summer Sunday, I was sporting flip-flops, rocking worship, and a dude actually did confront me saying, this is the house of the Lord, and how dare you, blah, 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 blah. And I remember thinking, my first thought was, what kind of shoes did Jesus wear? But then, when I actually thought about it, I don't want to be that distraction. Aaron Gillespie was here at main service rock and worship one time, and we were backstage hanging out, and he was wearing a t-shirt, and he said, do I need to cover my tattoos? Do I need to put on a dress shirt? I don't want to be a distraction. I don't, you know, but he was going to have to run out to the van and try and find a shirt. And I said, dude, no, don't you, but the heart behind it was what counted to me, was the fact that what's your heart behind it? Are you wanting to do everything as unto the Lord and honor him in that and be respectful and esteem others above yourself?
That's very true.
Because that's
the element of worship and teaching is to put all the focus on God.
Amen,
so,
dude.
Do you want somebody staring at your toes or staring at the songs, the lyrics of the song? You know, whether their heart's right or not, the more we can do to minimize people's distractions, more important
it is. It's like you said, it's cultural.
Yeah.
Remember, guys, if you go to church and you get offended by people's sandals or their clothes, if you got transported in time back to Jesus' time,
right.
Everyone wore dresses.
Right. So,
that's why Steve-O's getting all his tattoos removed this week.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. That'll do it for Shock Therapy Live. If you have a question, maybe you're out there listening right now, and you know, you can just email us. We can answer you throughout the week. We'll save it for next week. studio@star88.fm. And Pastor Nate Heidsieck, thank you so much, buddy.
Fun times.
Fun times, everybody. You guys have an amazing day. If you missed any of the show this morning, man, we had a little intervention with Teo this morning. Hit the podcast. Go to our Morning Invasion page at star88.fm.
Hey, and you better think twice about which hot wings you grab this weekend. Yeah.
That's right, because psychological profiling will happen.
Your friends are all going to be judging you and who you are.
All right.
Caribbean jerk for the win.
We'll see you tomorrow.